had that rule: make sure the lyrics are striking and they mean something, and they're deeper than your average song. I had the music. I had a poor enough 8-track recorder, and you know, I had no facilities whatsoever. I just had this absolute box room that was an oven.
Welcome to the Social Fabric Podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and this week my guest is Sean Murphy. Sean's stage name is All the Queen's Horses, a fantastic musician with some great new songs and an album on the way. Please subscribe, share, and review. It's the only way podcasts like this have a chance to survive. The program is also broadcast weekly on Near FM every Monday and on Flirt FM every Tuesday. The music in this podcast has been shortened for rights reason. The title tune is Alice by Lucky Bones.
Can I call you up, oh Alice, on a Friday night?
We could rest. Hey, Sean.
Andrea, sorry, I had to turn off the baby's white noise machine. How are you?
Good, good. You're turning off which? The white noise machine?
We have a new baby, and they have a white noise machine, and I'm in the back room, and it was just going off. And for the sound, I don't think it would have been optimum.
Very good. Very good. Well, thanks.
Great to meet you.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Thank you so much. Yeah, not at all. Lovely to meet you, and I'm delighted you can make it. And look, I've been doing this for a number of years, and I just love to talk to people and about different passion. And then I do another show that's called The In The Neighborhood, where I play music, and I came across your single. I thought, oh, that's lovely. And then I listened to the other two more songs, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that's great. And then I just thought, let's go and find out who this guy is. And so there you are.
You're right.
So
it was a lovely, lovely gesture. Really appreciate it. And I'll be very frank, I didn't know the show, but I do now. I follow it, and I have been listening to me and my wife, actually, all the podcasts. They're fantastic, and you've had some really, really good people on them as well. All those podcasts we've been listening all week, myself and my wife. So anyway, they're really good. You have something very cool there, and I'm very grateful to you. That's not lost on me at all, that you took the time to ask me on that. So very grateful.
Well, I appreciate it, and I love the way you say that. It's a lot of great people. As far as I'm concerned, everybody's a great person. Just we tend to know more.
Absolutely, right? We tend to know some of them
more than others, but that's all it is, really, you know. And
what
is fame, you know, and what is? But yeah, no, it's in fairness, and what I love about it is, it's getting to the bottom of stories for whatever the reason. So I guess with you, because I have no idea who you are. So who are you?
So basically, I am from Cork. Actually, sorry, is this being recorded now? No, or
yeah,
it is. Okay. Yeah. So my name, obviously, is Sean Murphy. I go under the moniker All the Queen's Horses. Born and raised in County Cork, and went to our local school, and then to Presentation Brothers College in the Mardig in Cork, and played a decent amount of rugby, and probably never really carried the look of a musician, but I did play music. I learned it fairly young, music, and you know, we were in an extended family of about 25 or so musicians. We all had to play music, so it was beat into us. I was made to play the piano classically and do theory lessons in the School of Music. I don't think I was that into it initially. Probably not. I think I actually rejected it wholly. Classical was probably naff to me, and maybe unnecessarily painful. I couldn't sing either. I didn't really have a sense of rhythm. My voice was probably below average. I actually remember, it must have been your communion or confirmation. One of them I was told not to sing for anyway. My sense of rhythm was cat, and music wasn't really something I was interested in. I played a lot of piano and piano lessons. And I think at one point I was doing so poorly with it. My mother, who, you know, maybe thought I was misunderstood, came in and demanded to sit in the one-to-one lessons, like, with me, to make sure that I got to a stage that was good. Still didn't warm to it, but I think when I was younger, I did start to listen to a lot of new music. I found bands like Manic Street Preachers, Nirvana, Radiohead. And actually, instead of maybe rejecting music, I applied my piano to it. And maybe instead of bashing out classical music, you know, my dad at home was playing conventional alternative music as well, playing and singing, which wasn't classical. So I must have stopped hating it, because all of a sudden I used to have like this vast collection of CDs and tapes and mixes and CD writers and LimeWire and Kazaa and a load of viruses and headphones coming in my ears. But I think I garnered and cultivated a fairly extensive knowledge of music. Met a friend in school in a similar position, and, you know, we liked music that wasn't known. Indie music, sad music, piano music, folk, Damien Rice, Radiohead, Mick Flannery, Declan O'Rourke, cellos. We had a big grow for cellos. And I obviously played piano and he played guitar. We stopped playing rugby. We focused on music and drinking. And I brought in some of my family musicians, and we made a band at 16, and we used to play cover gigs in pubs underage. I never could sing. And I played piano, and that was that. So it was this kind of a school band thing that we did. But that, you know, ended when I was 16, 17 years old, for about nearly 20 years. And, you know, there was no music in that time. I might have played it socially. That was it. Maybe on my own. I listened to a lot, but everything was really done. But in January, like 2020, a lot of things changed. Myself and my wife, we moved to London from Dublin with view to staying there. But COVID-19 hit fairly fast. And like everyone, we were kind of stuck indoors. And maybe out of nostalgic boredom, I bought like a 1980s manual 8-track recorder, and decided to take it upon myself to write like 30 to 35 songs in a short period of time. And most were poor, but they were a good learning curve. A lot of songs were recorded in my bedroom with no recording experience and questionable equipment. And this kind of makeshift tent of blankets in like 30-degree summers in Bethnal Green in London. Again, I couldn't sing, but I kind of played to my strengths. I kind of knew that if I kept it raw, guttural, and low, I could just about get away with singing.
You're going too fast for me. I need to bring you back for a second. Because that's a 20-year gap. I want to fill in not all of it, but some of it. Because first of all, you said a few things. The first thing you said to me, you're from Cork, which it's good to know. you guys always start with that. I think it's part of the genetics. You have to tell me you're from Cork, but that's good. Whereabouts in Cork, in the city or outside?
Just on the outskirts there, in a town called Monkstown.
Yeah.
Cork's version of Monkstown.
And you mentioned it, about 25 of your family are into music, or is some shape or form they're musicians. Is that did I hear that right?
Yeah, we've about 25 in our family. I think I should know the number, but I don't. Like aunts, uncles, cousins, you know. And everyone had to play music. You were basically made to learn two instruments. And we have great sessions and music sessions as a result of it. It also allows me to tap into a nice supply of instruments whenever I need them. But yeah, everyone did music. And yeah, I mean, I didn't like it, but I did it.
Okay. All right. Before I ask you, before I bring you back where I stopped you, tell me about, you know, the way I always ask for a couple of songs, you know, three songs from my guests. Tell me your first choice of song. What did you pick?
Yeah. So first song is 4th of July by Sufjan Stevens. In my opinion, it's the best song that I have heard. And anyone who doesn't know Sufjan Stevens, he's an incredible kind of American experiment of songwriter he kind of has this ability to make haunting, dark songs that knock you down. And he makes these melodies that are just chilling. They're really, really striking. I've actually, the song, is it in here? No, it's not in here, but I framed the actual sheet music for the song. In my house. It's about a conversation between Sufjan and his mother, and the main point is to tell her, you know, how short life really is. She got cancer, and it's a conversation between them after she died that he drew up. And he's just in there talking about, you know, light as a metaphor to life, you know, make the most of your life while it is right, while it is light. But the events where light is involved are so short, like in the lights in 4th of July, that it only lasts seconds and then it's darkness again. It's a super bit of music, and it's kind of built on the foundation of like three or four chords on a piano. It's just mainly him on a piano. Super song.
Night when you died, my firefly. What could I have said to raise you from the dead? Or could I be the sky on the 4th of July? Well, you do enough talk, my little hawk.
Okay. I will let you talk about your upcoming album and your songs, because I that's how I came about you. And I think they're fantastic. But that gap of 20 years, okay, you fell out of love with the music. It was beat into you a little bit as a kid. And then you had this cover band for a couple of years. You're playing rugby, you're giving up rugby. Then you give up music. What did you end up doing? What was that adult life like? What did you do? Is it... You're not full-time musician yet? Or are you?
Working and partying. Get a job. Go out. A lot of my musician friends were in different parts of the world as well. And I wasn't playing in bands with them. I had no intention of ever writing music myself. Wasn't on my agenda ever. Nor was on my agenda to ever sing. I mean, I definitely played the piano at home a lot. But never made my own stuff. Incidentally, never had the desire nor thought I would do it. But during those years, it was like, get a job, work, get money, go out. And I wasn't making music. But with COVID, I think everyone had an unusual year, and it was an unusual thing to do. I just said... I would just get this 8-track recorder, which is just such an outdated way of recording really now. I mean, I hadn't a clue. I didn't know what I was doing. And I just put together music again. And literally blasted a load of songs and eventually came out with an album. I had to buy all these instruments. I got this like synthesizer, and I kind of made this kind of alternative music, which was at the core me and a piano. But then, you know, we added extra instruments. I found a band. I got different producers and got an electric guitar and sang. And after 10 months of all of that, a pandemic, you know, moved back to Ireland. We actually had a baby, myself and my wife, who features on the album a lot. Selling of our house, getting a new house. We basically put out an album, put it out there, and, you know, it got decent reviews and record label interest, and I signed a publishing deal in January, I think, with Motor Music, or Motor Songs rather, and a record deal with Echoes and Music. And these journalists started following me, which was totally alien to me, and promoting me. And I submitted, I actually, one of the main songs on the album, which is Jocelyn, I submitted into the international songwriting competition in Nashville, which is the world's biggest songwriting competition. And other songs, and it won basically at it. It won in the folk category. And other songs were also semi-finalists and quarter-finalists, which was alien to me because the judges were like Tom Waits and Coldplay and Keane and Fleet Foxes and Dua Lipa. Jose is actually on it this year. And also the songs got on national radio as well, and a lot of magazines and blogs covered it, which was really cool. So anyway, it was alien to me. I'm not saying it blew the music world away or anything like that, but it just did better than I expected it to do, and I was very happy with it. Kind of came out of nowhere, really, off left field. Yeah, I think that kind of sums up pretty much how it kind of came and went.
Hang on, because again, you're very relaxed about this. Like, I know about the Nashville contest. I had another musician on that also submitted, also managed to win one of the categories, Gordon Barry, a lovely guy from Wexford.
I remember, yeah, Wexford.
Yeah, and it's great. But, okay, so you give up music. Okay, music is in you. You know how to play, but you gave it up for 20 years or so. How do you sit down and write 35 songs? And by your own admission, some of them, not necessarily that good, but enough, good enough to put out an album. How do you sit down and do that? What I know the COVID, but I mean, the actual, I'm interested in the creative process. What did you do? Obviously, you have a job. You have a family, moving houses, quite a lot going on there.
Yeah, I had a job. I work full time. I guess we weren't out socializing as well, so that gave me time. Yes, I hadn't really played with bands or anything in years and years and years, but by virtue of playing piano since you're like six, you have a very decent foundation that allows you to flow in and flow out. I was also playing a piano at home a lot for years. And I mean, I hadn't a clue how to write a song, like literally bluffing it. But I did see that, like, a lot of music, I feel, and others may disagree, I think there's a lot of mass-produced, homogenous type pop music out there that I think it's kind of like almost factory-esque the way it's put out. It's a lot of electronic, a lot of synth, and yeah, I'm kind of allergic to it. And I wanted to make music that didn't have these formulaic type lyrics, and I wanted poetic type lyrics. And I mean, I wouldn't say I read poetry or anything like that, but I would have a decent knowledge of some very good poetry. And for the album, I read a lot of poetry as well, and I applied that to lyrics to kind of, with view to making songs that are different and have rock solid lyrics in them, and be more than, you know, just your average "I love you, baby," and just to make them a bit deeper, basically. And I sat down, I had that rule: make sure the lyrics are striking and they mean something. And they're deeper than your average song. I had the music. I had a poor enough 8-track recorder, and, you know, I had no facilities whatsoever. I just had this absolute box room that was an oven. And, like, I was trying to record out in London, and all these Boy Racers and Bethnal Green were, like, you know, slamming down on the accelerators. Like, and it was just so loud. It was actually very hard to record anything in that. Like, I'd literally be, I get to 90% of the way through a song and I'd have done it about 20 times. And next minute, a Boy Racer engine would come through and I literally would have to stop and go back to the start. Anyway, I did that and I put a lot of time and time investment and financial investment into it. And I got a producer. And to answer your question, that's how I was able to get it, just by virtue of my knowledge in music. And it's just kind of this principle of write lyrics that are a lot more in depth than your average chart song. And, you know, get nice instruments, get piano, cello, unique instruments. I got super producers, Beard Fairy Music, Tiz McNamara. They helped me and they taught me as well, actually. So I think that's how. Does that maybe add color?
It does, absolutely. So tell me about your second song before I get deeper into a couple of the songs, your songs.
Yeah, sure, sure. Perfume Genius is an artist who is, I think he could be construed as unusual. He, at, you know, basic level, it's him and a piano, but he has a lot of electronic as well, which I actually introduced as well, which I like. And he basically wrote a song called Normal Song. And what he looks to do, I think, in the song is just redefine what normal means, with these kind of marginalized characters that he draws up in his head. And he's kind of shown that, like, dealing with the past for the future isn't a case of, like, wiping the slate clean for all these unusual people, for want of a better word, who have, you know, troublesome past, but rather coming to terms with yourself, all strings attached. And it's just him on a piano and he's getting that across, and he expressed it fairly well. It's a really nice song. I think that sums it up.
Hold my hand, I am afraid. Please pray for me when I am away. Comfort the girl, help her understand.
So, as I was saying, I first came across your music with Raised by the Wolves, which I think is an amazing song and an amazing video to go with it. And now that you mention your influence, you mentioned a lot of the musicians that I genuinely love, the likes of Mick Flannery and the likes of Declan O'Rourke and so on and so forth. You know, that I can hear the influence, and I'm not a connoisseur. I love music. I wouldn't call myself a connoisseur. Definitely not a critic. But that song in particular, and I'll play this episode with that, if that's okay with you, just to give people a flavor of your music. But what is that song all about? And because it's quite, I heard it, and I tell you what, the moment I heard it, I passed it on to my daughter. She's 18. I sent it to her. I said, look, listen to this new person. I didn't know if it was a guy, a girl, a band. I didn't know anything. I said, listen to this new band. It's brilliant, you know? And I said, it's quite haunting. That's the way I describe it to her. Then I watched the video, and I think that kind of said, yeah, no, there's something haunting about it. Tell me the genesis of that song. Because it might inform the listener. I've never met you before, but you come across quite, I suppose, a deep thinker. You're thinking enough about things. You're not just doing things off the fly. Well, that, I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Incidentally enough, that, you know, it's one of my least favorite songs on the album, but I do like it. And when I went to make an album, I was like, I can't do just a generic singer-songwriter, guitar and voice, or just me and a piano. And that works really well for a lot of people. But I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do the Mick Flannery, I'm going to do the Elliot Smith, I'm going to do the Damien Rice, the raw, the piano, the acoustic. But I wanted to add in an electronic element as well, and you can probably hear the electronic in this. Like, it's not your standard Mick Flannery song, it's not your standard Damien Rice song. Like, there's a lot of synthesizers in that song, so it's different. There's a band, you may or may not have heard of them, called Talus, and they make a lot of music like that. And I was kind of one day just at the piano, I was like, I'm gonna make a Talus song. And this is what kind of came out. And the song itself, like, it's about a character who always just kind of gets on with things. It's not necessarily personal, actually, but it's a scenario I drew up. Sometimes, like, even in work, or, you know, at home, or in the shower, or whatever, like, I think through scenarios that could be well scripted for a song. And one scenario was somebody who has been let down repeatedly, you know, over and over and over again, and they can usually just swallow it. But on this occasion, something went drastically wrong. And you would find that some of the songs I have, there is a dark element to them. So I tried to stir up all these dark kind of colors and insinuations throughout. And anyway, this one was that, and it was somebody who was taking revenge, angry, you know, targeting someone who let them down, and they were taking names, and, you know, how they were going to destroy them. And it's a dark, haunting kind of revenge tale. Maybe that's the best way to describe it.
And what brings you to stir up this darkness? What is the drive for you? I mean, okay, you're writing song, there's a creative process, but what is the message? What do you want to get out of music, other than just obviously create an album, but what else is there?
I'm trying to avoid anything formulaic and too simplistic. I don't get anything out of songs that are, now, with exceptions, there definitely is, but, like, if I'm making something, I'm going to make something that's entertaining, deep, dark, swirling, haunting, chilling. So I draw these scenarios up in my head that I think will meet that. And then those I feel warrant being on the album, if they're good enough. And I just think doing that way makes them more interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's some, like, even there's a song called My Angel Sang to Notre Dame. It was actually a semi-finalist at the International Songwriting Competition as well. But it's talking about, like, it's talking about a person, two people who realize that something bad has happened to them, and the implications of that are really coming down the line, and, you know, they're going to see that they were probably taken advantage of. And, you know, the lyrics are we watching deer? Are we asleep at the wheel? And this beehive brain said the storm clouds are real. The seven cross on that seven hill, with the grace of God, you can mend me. So, like, just kind of conveying this dark scenario in these words. I just think it's a better product. And that's what I tried to do with all the Queen's Horses.
Okay. And tell me about the name, All the Queen's Horses.
Yeah, All the Queen's Horses. So, like, I think it carries a bit of a bang. One of the things, like I said, those songs are very lyrical. Like, there's one song called I Am the Quartz, the Labrador and Labyrinth, right? So there's a lot of words going on. So I think the name All the Queen's Horses kind of gives a hat tip to that poetic kind of element, that historical element. There's a lot of history in my songs. You know, that kind of wordy element. And I think it also carries a bang. Like, I mean, it's from that child's nursery rhyme, All the King's Horses. But I was like, this is a bit different. It's All the Queen's Horses. And I think it's memorable, and I think it fits the music. That's my thought process. And I didn't want to go under the name Sean Murphy, because to me, that's just too plain. So I was like, you know, And there are bands that do that model. You look at Perfume Genius, you know, well, there's a few more, I just can't think of them. But anyway, there is a kind of a cohort of band or artists that go on. Villagers, for example, is another one.
Brilliant.
And that's the thought process, really.
Brilliant. With the Nashville, I want to go back to Nashville, because you mentioned Jocelyn is the one who won, am I correct?
Song. You're right on that.
What was it like? I mean, that's your first attempt as such to writing music and putting it out there. And next thing you win, which is one of the, it probably is the best song contest, the writing contest in the world, as far as I know. And there you are, you're winning the folk section. What was that like? How did that happen? Did you get a phone call? Did you get an email? Were you alive?
Yeah, and actually, it's probably worth mentioning that, I was there one day when I came back from London, and I was like, I don't know where I was, on Facebook or something, and the artist John Spillane, who you may know of, he did these songwriting courses, and he actually used to live up the road from me, and I wouldn't say I know him, but I'd know him to say hi, like, and I joined that. And I was bringing some songs to that. It was a great course, actually. And he kind of said to me, he's like, come here, your songs are too abstract. Like, you got to come back down to earth. And I explained to him that, you know, some songs need to be abstract. You're going to have artists like Radiohead. And, you know, anyway, there's a plethora of bands that write very abstract songs. And he got that. He's like, I would like to see you do a song that's more specific. So I was like, all right. Gave me a week, and I came back with Jocelyn. I was at a piano in West Cork, and I saw a bag of coal, and it was on Jocelyn Road. And I was like, all right, that's going to be the heroine of this song, Jocelyn. It's a great, strong name. And anyway, brought it back to John. That was fine. I eventually wrote it out fully. And I didn't have a hope by the time. There's lots of stuff I look back and I'd love to change, but time, when you're working full time, doesn't allow you. I submitted it to the ISC, my label actually did. And I didn't expect anything. Like, I mean, the judges are Coldplay, the judges are Tom Waits. My dad used to teach me Tom Waits songs on the piano when I was younger. Like, he's huge. I thought, you know, maybe it would go to some degree, but not the finals at all, or win it. And long story short is I put it, and then it got to the semi-final, and then it got to the quarter-final, then it got to the semi-final. And I mean, all those times, it was just hilarious. Like, myself and my wife were just, we couldn't believe it. Like, it was so random. Like, and anyway, we have a baby now, which has kind of stopped my writing. And I had got up early, so I went down to bed one day, and I like woke up at 2 o'clock, and I just looked at my phone. Congratulations, you're a winner. Like, and I was out of it. But I went in, like, look at this. I literally showed her the phone. And it was mad. It was really mad. So yeah, maybe Tom Waits and Coldplay liked it. Who knows? But it was a very surreal experience. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it warrants that level, but happy that it was received at that level.
Well, fantastic. Congratulations. It's brilliant. It's brilliant to hear. Tell me about your third song, please, Sean.
Yeah, cool. So my third song is the Ladder song. It's done by Bright Eyes. And for anyone who doesn't know, Conor O'Burst is the leader of that. He's a US-based singer-songwriter. As an artist, I kind of find him imperfect. Their flaws, and I really like that. And I also find him staggering, but mainly staggering. He has a voice kind of similar to me. It's raw, like emotive, guttural, and his songs are often him and a piano. And this song is about how no one knows what happens when you die, and he doesn't feel religion is going to solve it. But when it does happen, he knows he's going to embrace it. And the lyrics are like, no one knows where the ladder goes. And the ladder is just like a metaphor for death. And it's just him and a piano, and it's gorgeous. Really, really nice song. And yeah, that's it.
No one knows where the ladder
You're gonna lose what you love the most. You're not alone in anything. You're not unique in dying. Feel estranged every now and then. Fall asleep reading science fiction. I wanna fly in your silver ship.
You mentioned a couple of times you have a full-time job, and so this and a new baby. Congratulations on the baby as well. And so full-on grown-up life, you know, paying bills, changing nappies, all of that stuff, and just released an album. Is there a plan to play live gigs if and when the live gigs are back? And if so, how are you planning it? You just signed with a record label as well. What are the expectations there?
Sure. Well, I signed in January with Echoism, a record deal and a publishing deal with Motor Songs. I released three singles up to now. So I have three singles on Spotify. But my album is going to be coming out in September next month. And it will have a lot more fuller picture of what All the Queen's Horses is. And the plan then is to release that. And after that, I don't know. It's proving taxing to make an album or write or add any new content at the moment, I think, because our baby's at such a young age. So I don't know if I'll be doing it again for a while or what. I'm not 100% sure on that. I'll see what I can do. We're also buying a house, so... yeah, like for now. Oh, and sorry, your question was about gigs. For sure, yeah, I have a headline gig in Whelan's in Dublin on Wednesday, October 15th. And we have a huge set of guest musicians coming in with me. And it's pretty much my first gig, but it's going to be very intimate and raw. I think it'll be a really cool night for the discerning musician. So, yeah, that's the plan. And if there are more gigs, we will definitely be doing more. And we're looking to festivals now as well. So trying to marry all that in at the moment, that's the plan of action.
That's brilliant. I'll see if I can get tickets, because I've just booked tickets for Mick Flannery, actually, and Susan O'Neill in Whelan's just the month after. But just one thing I'm curious about, and this, you know, this the whole genesis of this podcast was always around the passion and the community and so on. But the passion I'm really keen on, because I understand you have to have a full-time job, you have to pay your mortgage, you have to buy a house, all of those things. But is this a passion now? Have you rediscovered the passion of music? Have you rediscovered the beauty of it? You know, having created a nice product that is what you wanted to create. It is getting recognition from international and national critics and so on. And how are you hoping to marry the two? How are you hoping to marry that passion while maintaining a full-time job and the rest?
Yeah. I think my child getting older will help. I think my absolute love of it will help. I think the fact that I've done a lot of groundwork will help. I think that passion is very tangible. Like, I mean, the hours that I put into that album are absolutely outrageous. Like many 4 in the mornings, you know, many hours, like a lot of hours, largely because I just didn't know what I was doing as well. So yeah, the passion, the fact that, you know, my kids are going to get older, a bit of time, and, you know, things will settle after COVID as well. So I think those factors will help, but I don't think it's going to come around fast. It's possible that there could be a bit of time before I have new music again.
Okay. I won't ask you anything about Cork, because we know too much about Cork already. But I do want to ask you about again, ask everybody a suggestion for a book, and I'd be curious to hear what book you picked and why. And it could be Dr. Seuss, if that's what you're reading to your child already.
Okay. Good book recommendation. I think I'm going to go with Animal Farm. I think it's a fantastic book. And a great look at the socioeconomic state of society. And it's simple, it's short, and it's to the point, and it's in your face. Just think it's a great book. And, you know, anyone can kind of grasp it. So I'm going to go with that.
Brilliant. Okay, so just before we finish, I had suggested the song that's your least favorite, Raised by the Wolves, as an ending to this conversation. But we can pick whatever you like, and it's your music and it's your choice. What would you like to end the conversation with for people to know you by? And obviously they will buy the album when the album is out. But
sure, yeah. Yeah, probably Jocelyn. It's at the moment my flagship song, really. So yeah, I'd say Jocelyn.
Okay, we'll go with Jocelyn. So Sean, look, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, and I will look forward to see you. I'll see if I can get to Wheelands in time for your gig, but I'll keep an eye out for the album, because I think as I said in the show I did on the radio there, the music show, that I think we'll hear a lot more from you. So I hope your child grows really fast.
Thanks very much, Andrew. I really appreciate that.
And thanks again, and I shall talk to you soon.
Yeah, super stuff. Thank you.
Still like you always did, and I will find you, and I will find them. No honor in thieves, watch me follow you like I followed them. When the storms came, I'd stay out in the snow. I was raised by wolves, dear, when the devil lets me know. Hold on to Jerusalem, my arrow and my bow. I brought my wolves, dear, my wolves, they would not go. And I live in fire, and there's no symmetry, and there's no winning here. And their virgin chests swim near, and there's no fitting in while you're sitting here. When the storms came, I'd stay.